Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
When this happened, you talk about it on The Fan.
David Wells has pitched a perfect game. 27 up, 27 down. Baseball immortality for David Wells. And the Yankees win. The Yankees win.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
Everybody get up.
This was the big song of the summer, whatever year it was. Always makes me think of summer for whatever reason. It doesn't have the same place in my heart as, you know, Jimmy Buffett or Bob Marley or the Beach Boys, but it definitely makes me think of summer, and summer is upon us. Plus, I got to mix it up a little bit. Play, you know, give something to the kids. Although that song's probably 12 years old. I mean, it's amazing how time flies. I told you yesterday about how, you know, The Dark Knight is 16 years ago, and Times are moving fast. And we are already to the Eastern Conference Finals, and the Rangers need to figure out a way to bring a little bit more enthusiasm, a little bit of juice. Is that Matt Rempe? That a lot of people seem to think so. I'm not so convinced that that needs to be the move, but it might be to give this crowd a spark, to give this team a spark, because that's what they need. They need to figure out a way to create an edge. As I heard Boomer say this morning or yesterday morning, and I agree, they were just lacking that little bit of an edge. They had it at times. There was that flurry right before, and then they had the power play that the flurry led to a penalty, which that power play was probably their most dynamic of the two. And it just, like, there was that brief moment there, but that was it. There was really nothing created. There was no, you know, they got to get more shots on Bobrovsky. As great as he is, you got to throw shots at him. They got to figure out a way to get more than 23 shots on him. They just have to. But I believe in this team. I do. This is a series. This is going to be a hard-fought series. I don't think Florida has their number. I don't think Florida understands how to win these games, and the Rangers don't. I don't believe any of those, you know, narratives that are anti-Rangers. That's a tough game, one loss. They have to bounce back. I agree. Tonight is a must-win. And think about where we are. I mean, I know as the Pacers go down 0-2 to the Celtics, Halliburton leaves with a right hamstring injury in the third. They get blown out late in this game. And I told you, they had their opportunity to win game one. But, I mean, we had the Garden Party. We had the Knicks. We still have the Rangers. This is as great a spring and now into early summer as we could ever have asked for. And it doesn't have to end here. And tonight, it could. The feeling of this series will dramatically change from, hey, it's a series. Go figure out a way to get tough and get that edge against Florida. To, oh, my God, how the hell are they going to go to Florida down 0-2 and get back into the series? Like, it changes that quick. Tonight is a must-win for the New York Rangers. 888-808-1019, 888-808-1019. Casey in Staten Island, what's up, Casey?
Hey, what's going on, Big Mac?
What's up, buddy?
Hey, listen, not much, but I'm glad you took that other caller before you took me. This way I didn't have to follow up in the butt. That was going to be weird for me.
I hear you, but hey, listen. Sometimes you got to do what you got to do.
Yeah, well, I guess we all got to push through.
That's it.
Anyway, also, he was saying that people were writing Judge off. I don't remember them writing him off. I think they were just worried about injuries and
no,
whatnot.
I mean, people were very concerned. People were talking about, well, it's been a month. We've never seen Judge perform this poorly for this long a stretch. You know, he's got the toe injury. Like, there was a concern that this was going to be close, that you were going to be closer to seeing that Judge than you would ever be again to seeing the Judge you're seeing now. I think there was a little bit of that. But you're right. I wouldn't say people were just like, oh, he's going to be awful. But people were concerned we were ever going to see this type of Judge again. And I never doubted it for a second.
Definitely, definitely glad we got the guy we got, I guess yesterday it is now. But anyway, the reason I called was this talk, LeMahieu's going to get slid right back in as a starting role.
Yeah.
I don't know how much I like that, thinking, you know, Frere kind of really did a good job filling in, maybe even deserves more of a shake than he's going to get here with LeMahieu. You know, he's a guy that I wonder, are we ever going to see the guy we saw a couple years ago?
Oh, no doubt.
Pulled him off the scrap heap.
Yeah, no doubt. And that is without question a legitimate question that I honestly think the answer is no. I don't think we will ever see the same DJ LeMahieu, but he's such a, he's a good enough player where he immediately, if healthy, gets the spot. I'm sorry. I like Cabrera. I think he's done a nice job. And listen, they'll rotate the infield a little bit. Now they'll have a legitimate backup for Rizzo. You know, Rizzo will get a couple days off against lefties. He's not really killing the baseball right now. So you'll get LeMahieu, you know, playing some second for Torres, playing some first. Cabrera can come in. Now you have a legitimate backup for shortstop. Maybe, you know, I think they like to play Volpe, but maybe a day here. So Cabrera will be the utility infielder. Or maybe he gets sent down. We'll see. I don't know. But
so
I think you got to give DJ. I'm concerned about DJ, but I'll tell you this, and I said it before. Not only do I think DJ should come back and be in the starting lineup, I probably think once he gets his footing, I probably want to see him back at the top of the lineup.
Well, if he gets his footing.
Yeah.
But, you know, you talk about who's going to lose playing time. Who's going to lose a job here?
Well, Jones is going to be the guy who goes off the bench. We never see him, so Jones is going to be the guy who goes off the bench, and the bench will then be Grisham, Cabrera, Birdie, and Wells and Trevino, one of the two backup catchers.
All right.
So I mean,
right,
yeah,
that's
no problem. They're going to send Jones back down. So that's who's going to lose their job. But the reason I say that, and you know, as much as he's in a 16 game hitting streak, and he's playing great, so I probably let it go for a little bit. But I said this at the beginning of the year. I've said it multiple times now, but I just want to make sure that you people don't think I'm reacting to Michael Kay saying it, because I've been saying this from the jump. I said it on the Rico Bronya prior to the season when me and Evan were making Yankee Met bets. My concern with Volpe at the top of the lineup is I like utilizing every tool a player has. And as we saw in the game yesterday with the steal of third, Volpe's speed and base stealing ability is a major tool for him. And it's an asset. And I've always felt this way. I am not going to steal a lot of bases in front of Judge and Soto, or Soto and Judge. I don't want to do that. I don't want to risk outs on the base path with those two guys coming up. And especially with Soto hitting second, if Volpe gets on, I want to run her on first to keep that first baseman on the bag and open up that hole between first and second with the left-handed swinging Soto. But just overall, they're such good hitters. And Soto walks so often that I just can't imagine getting thrown out. And we saw it the other day. He got thrown out stealing second, and then the two of them walked, and they would have had bases loaded, one out instead of first and second, nope, and two outs. Like, it just, I don't like the idea of getting thrown out in the bases. And yes, he stole second. If the pitcher's not paying attention to you, sure, it might happen here or there. But it'll dramatically limit the amount of stolen bases. And I want to use that tool set. You put him at the bottom of the lineup, and now you can create runs. You know, you get on as a seven hitter late in the game. Now you set up an inning. Now Volpe gets on first. He steals second. You bunt him over to third. Now you've set up an inning from the bottom of your lineup where he's going to be planted at first base if he gets on in front of Soto and Judge, and rightfully so. Why would you risk it? So I want to use his entire toolbox, and I think his base-stealing ability gets completely washed hitting leadoff. But, I mean, if he's going to go on this hitting streak and he's going to hit 310 and DJ LeMahieu is a shell of himself hitting 240, then, yeah, of course, I'd rather have the 310 hitter. But as long as DJ is close to being DJ, I like the idea of the guy who gets on base at a clip that DJ gets on, And then just, we don't have to worry. He plants himself. That's his game. He's not going to steal bases. And he's just going to be on first base. Because I don't want to feel like, man, Volpe is just stranded at first. I don't want to risk taking second. Where at the bottom of the lineup, I can create runs by stealing bases with Volpe. The dangerous threat, hitting seventh, hitting eighth. Hitting first, he doesn't do any of that. Tommy in Astoria. What's up, Tommy?
Hey, Chris, how you doing?
Good, how are you, buddy?
Not good. Listen, I try to be an optimistic Mets fan. I've talked to you before, mm-hmm. but this is getting depressing. See, the scary thing is this. If you see who's lined up, like Hicks is pitching, then Webb, then it's lined up to be Yamamoto and Glasnow.
Yep.
They're not hitting these guys. And the problem is, even if they start hitting, the bullpen's springing leaks now because they're overused. And the Raley injury is really big.
Yeah.
It's really big because now you lost him, and in effect you lost Diaz. And when you take Alvarez out of the equation and his pitch calling is, you know, everybody's lauding, these are big issues.
When you I don't know about the pitch calling so much. His offense is what I'm concerned about. Tomas Nito is good behind the plate, and he's actually giving you more offensively than I thought he would. But Alvarez, you're missing the offense of Alvarez.
Yeah. No, I don't. I just, like I said, I try to be optimistic.
It's tough to be optimistic.
I can't, because the young players are either hurt that are in the minors, are either hurt or they're being unproductive in the minors. So there's no cavalry coming. And can I just make one more point? I understand there's no such thing as curses, but this team just seems to have a black cloud. How do you explain that Lindor was 27 years old when we got him? He was a 285 hitter with Cleveland. His average with the Mets is 248.
Yeah.
How do you explain that? On a kid like Beatty, who's like a top 30 prospect and the consensus number one third base prospect in baseball, can't. I mean, this isn't the Mets propping this kid up. This is like scouts organizations that have him there. And he can't hit. I mean, how does this happen? It just makes no sense.
Yeah, I mean, listen, they're not alone, though. I mean, you know, that happens a lot. I mean, it happens to all teams. I mean, Jared Kelenic. Right, you traded him to Seattle. He's supposed to be this can't miss prospect.
He hasn't panned out.
He's on Atlanta. He's on a completely different team. I mean, we've seen it. I mean, the Yankees had the baby bombers come up and be successful and then fail. Greg Bird comes up and he's really good, and then he can't hit. Gary Sanchez comes up, he hits 35 home runs, he's a 2-time All-Star, and then he's garbage. Like, so, I mean, that makes even less sense than Beatty just never getting it together. So, I mean, as much as I hear what you're saying, and the same, it happens with all teams. Like, I can give you examples. I know he still had good seasons and productive seasons, and he won a World Series, but you've seen Mark Teixeira join the Yankees as a 290, 280 hitter, and he was a 240 hitter trying to hit the porch. And didn't become the kind of same player. So it's a lot of things. But yes, Lindor has been an overall disappointment. It's not been a brutally bad disappointment. He's not, you know, he's not awful. He's actually had decent seasons. Like, let's look at Lindor. I mean, I know he's a 240 hitter. I understand that. But it's not like he's been terrible or had no good stretches for the New York Mets. He's been fairly, you know, his best years were in Cleveland, no doubt about it. His best years were in Cleveland. His best years, he was runner-up rookie of the year, top five MVP in 2017. So in 2017, he hit 273. So he's hit his rookie year 313. Then he hit 301. Then he hit 273. With an OPS of 842, 33 home runs, 89 RBIs. Then in 2018, 38 home runs, 92 RBIs, hit 277 with an OPS of 871. Then he had 32 home runs, 74 RBIs. So, yeah, I mean, listen, he had a three-year stretch there for Cleveland where he had 33, 38, 32 home runs, 89, 92, 74 RBIs. He had an OPS of 842, 871, 854. Any of those years other than, I mean, 2020, in 22 for the Mets, he had 26 home runs. He had 107 RBIs. The most RBIs ever for a shortstop for the Mets. He hit 270. I mean, that's a very good year for a shortstop, considering the defense he plays. He had one excellent year. And then last year, 31 home runs, 98 RBIs. I mean, yes, you're right. His batting average has dipped from where it was in Cleveland. But, I mean, his production level last year, 31.98 for a shortstop that plays gold glove caliber defense, that's an excellent season. You could say it however you want. 254, I don't care. Ideally, I'd like it more, but he's got an 806 OP, an 800 OPS, 31 home runs, 98 RBIs playing shortstop, and the caliber shortstop he plays, I don't care that he hit 250. I mean, would you rather have him hit 280? Sure, but I'd rather have him hit 350. Those are two. I mean, his first year was a bit of a disappointment. He only played 125 games. But these last two seasons prior to this one, 26 and 107, hitting 270, 33, 31 and 98 with an 800 OPS, playing his level of shortstop. I mean, those are pretty damn good seasons. I mean, it's if you want to point to curses and that there's a black cloud over the organization, I understand Lindor makes a lot of money. I understand Jimenez has had a great couple of years in Cleveland. Lindor is not the place to look at and go, see, we're cursed.
You know?
TJ in Fairlawn. What's up, TJ?
D-Mac, how we doing?
Good, TJ. What's going on?
Listen, I feel like I'm one of the biggest Matt Rempe defenders out there, and I have a couple reasons why
Please.
The Rangers need to start him.
Okay, go ahead.
Number one, he changes the energy. I mean, whenever he's in, I feel like the whole game changes, even if they're home or away. There's Ranger fans everywhere. Regardless, I feel like he brings the energy. He keeps the momentum up for the team. Number two, the Rangers are 14-2-1 in the regular season with Rempe in the lineup. That's no coincidence. I feel that Rempe pretty much like brings the atmosphere. He changes the game. That's why they went 14-2-1. Number three, I feel like having an enforcer in the lineup changes the whole game plan for your opponent. I mean, game one, they were hitting players left and right on the Rangers, Florida was. I feel like them having Rempe, if they make one bad hit or a hit that, like, LaViolette doesn't like or somebody on the team doesn't like, they have to fear for Rempe. You know what I'm saying?
Okay, let me attack those three one by one. Your first one is your best one, in my opinion. I agree. He provides a spark a little bit. The crowd loves him. They get into him. I don't know how much the team feeds off him for a little bit when he first came up, and it was like, oh, he got introduced with Matt Martin right into a fight, and you know he kept fighting, and the team applauded it and everything, and that's the element he brought, and a little bit of a spark. Fine, I'm with you on that. Two, the record, while obviously that's an incredible record, 14-2, it's a team that won the President's Trophy. You're not talking about a team that struggled without him. They had an excellent record no matter who was in the lineup for them. And then three, which is the one I really disagree with. I understand your point, I guess, the enforcer angle of it. This is not a game in February. This is a playoff series to get to the Stanley Cup Finals. Do you really believe that the Florida Panthers believe that the best way to beat the Rangers is to be physical with them, to hit them, to give them the extra hit, to go out of their way to play the body instead of the puck, like really just be physical and hit them. They feel that's the best way to beat them, but they will change that game plan because the imposing Matt Rempe is on the ice? Like, I find it hard to believe that they will stop hitting because they will fear Rempe so much. Like, it's one thing, yeah, okay, hey, listen, I don't feel like getting my ass kicked tonight so I could beat the Rangers in March. Like, it's not worth it, or in maybe March is too late, in December. Like, it's just not worth it. I don't feel like getting my ass kicked by this big, massive guy over a game in March. Fine. This is to get to the Stanley Cup. If they think hitting the Rangers is the best thing to do and the way they're going to out-physical them and the way they're going to, you know, win this war of attrition that is the NHL postseason, like, I find it hard to believe that, like, he's some sort of Paul Bunyan, King Kong, Godzilla-type figure where they're like, oh, my God, how dare we? Like, who disturbs my slumber? And here comes Matt Rempe ready to kick the crap out of everybody. I just find it hard to believe.
So kind of like the backup with it. You may not agree with this, but like I kind of believe highly on this. Look at 2022. Rangers were barely got into the playoffs. They made it all the way to the Eastern Conference Final, went to six games with a juggernaut in the Tampa Bay Lightning at the time. Look who was on the team at the time, Ryan Reeves. There are so many times throughout that series where Reeves at the time, he still may be the top enforcer in hockey right now. There are so many instances throughout the series, whether it was maybe Pittsburgh, mostly Carolina. Sometimes he went at it with Pat Maroon in the Eastern Conference Finals.
Right.
And then he would, whenever they got chippy, he would always be there. There'd always be a force. He'd always pick in, you know? And then you lose him in 2023. You lose him early in the season. It's whatever. They make it to the playoffs, and then it's the Devils series. I feel like there were times there where, like, Reeves, if he was there, it would have been a whole different series. You know what I'm saying?
All right. I hear you. I think Reeves is probably a more sound hockey player. And here's the other thing. The coach doesn't trust, like, this is my main part. Like, the coach doesn't trust him. He doesn't play in the third period. He plays 5 minutes because they're afraid of his taking a bad penalty. Like, it would be one thing if it's like, hey, Rempe's been playing. They're 14-2. Everything's great. He plays, 11, 12 minutes a game. He does his role. And then all of a sudden, well, Filippito's just been cleared by the doctor, so we're going to go with him. They don't trust Rempe. Like, it's just plain and simple. They don't trust him. Now, again, you might have a point. I find it hard to believe. Doesn't make it not true. Okay? I don't have delusions of grandeur. Me not thinking it doesn't make it accurate. I get that. Maybe it does have an impact. Maybe you're right. Maybe they play him, and I mean, listen, if he plays and changes the dynamic of the series, I'll be the happiest son of a gun to ever be wrong in your life. But I just have a hard time seeing that. I have a hard time seeing that, hey, they had an enforcer in that year, so they went all the way to the Eastern Conference Finals. I guess it didn't help against you mentioned juggernaut, so I guess that you just felt they were too good to beat. And so that's where the Rangers stopped, and that's why. And then last year, they lose a series. They're up 2-0 to the Devils because they don't have an enforcer. And now Rempe, who probably, like, I know he gets some hits, but he seems like, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong. He's physical, and he's big. But I feel like most of it's come from the fighting. Like, I haven't felt like he's laid a ton of these imposing hits where it's like, and again, are you telling me Florida, like you mentioned, you said, maybe they'll have a little second thought and worry they'll have to deal with Rempe. Do you honestly believe that they will change their style of play or go against what they think is the best way to beat this Ranger team because he's on the ice? Again, this isn't business decisions in October. This is to get to the Stanley Cup Finals. If they think hitting the Rangers is what's going to get them there, they'll deal with getting their hit themselves. Like, I don't think it'll change their game plan. Now, if you want to say it'll make the Rangers better at playing that game, okay. I'm open to it. But I don't think it's this. Like, it's almost being portrayed as break glass in case of emergency. One, I don't think it's an emergency right now. They lost game one. Somebody had to. I don't think it would be an emergency if the Rangers won game one. It wouldn't be an emergency for Florida. They need to win this game, but, like, break glass in case of emergency, and here comes Superman. Superman was on this team. Superman has played in playoff games. Superman rides the bench. He's Clark Kent chasing around Lois Lane. And she doesn't want to put him in. That sounded dirty, but it really isn't. I didn't mean that dirty at all.
Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. for millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Now the pass across, they score! The Rangers take a 4-3 lead with 4:19 remaining. Long shift and the finish by Chris Kreider. A third period hat trick.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
How could Here Comes the Sun not make you think of the summer?
Here comes the sun.
All right, 2:34. McMonagle here with you. 888-808-1019. That's right. That's the new number as we kick off the summer here on this Memorial Day. It just feels different. The computers are different. There's signs everywhere with the new number. I'm getting used to my whole... I'm such a creature of habit when it comes to this place. Let's get back to the phone calls as we opened up the baseball. And yes, because it is Memorial Day, and that is typically the old cliche where you could begin to look at your team. You take your first gander, you care where you are in the standings, which, by the way, the Yankees are in, you guessed it, first place. They are now 3 games over the Baltimore Orioles. They have the best record in the American League. Are the Dodgers... No, only the Philadelphia Phillies, who are on a historic clip, are better than the New York Yankees. They have, let's just double check, scored the most runs in the American League, and they have given up the least runs in all of baseball. Now, the Braves have given up one more. They have scored the most runs in the American League, and they have given up the least amount of runs in all of baseball. They are a dominant force, and that rotation. Yes, we all know how important the offense is. We get it. We know how important the offense is. And that's how they've been judged in postseasons and how they probably will be again. But this rotation was supposed to be the weakness, and they were supposed to be, as one of my favorite X or Twitter followers, a guy who interacts with me a lot, I'll give him a pop here. Brian Cashman Blows is his Twitter handle. And as you can guess, we disagree on many a thing. And he was telling me that without Cole, this team is 500. This is lucky to be a 500 team without Cole. And that's because the rotation was kind of up in disarray. We weren't sure about it. We weren't sure whether or not, you know, Rodon would come back to being anywhere close to what he was the 2 years prior to signing with the Yankees. We weren't sure about Nestor Cortez coming off an injury in a season where he couldn't get through the lineup 3 times. We weren't sure about Clark Schmidt or Luis Gil. And every single question has been answered, and Luis Gil is a friggin' ace. He is unbelievable. His fastball changeup combination is devastating. His location is excellent. He is another ace out there and a perfect guy to pair with Cole in a postseason series. And while, yes, Judge's emergence is amazing, he's got a, listen to the, I mean, it's just odd. He's got 11 singles, 11 doubles, and 11 home runs in his last 25 games. He already leads Major League Baseball in extra base hits and walks. And this is a guy who struggled the entire first month of the season. Him and Soto are a dangerous force in the middle of the lineup. The offense has come alive, but it is still this rotation without Cole, waiting for Cole's return, who threw a couple of live batters, easy 95. Everything feels great. He's about a month away, maybe another week longer than that, but he is coming back, And this rotation is going to get the best pitcher in baseball, and they're already the best pitching staff in all of baseball. And they have the best team ERA in the American League. They have a tremendous closer. The bullpen's very good. The rotation's been excellent. And the offense has come alive. And they are the best team in the American League. And that's where we find ourselves as we pop our head up and take a look at where they are in the standings and take a look at where they are in the American League. Graham and Hackensack. What's up, Graham?
How you doing tonight?
Good. How are you, buddy?
I'm good, my man. I've got a Yankee point. We'll see if we get there first. I just have to comment on how bad the umpiring has been in baseball this year. Did you see how the White Sox-Orioles game ended?
I certainly did, yes. I was paying attention to the White Sox and the Orioles, and it is... I have to watch it again, but it is... It's one of the worst calls I've ever seen. I don't know.
You don't need to watch it again. You know what you saw. There's no intricacies here. It's an infield fly roll. The guy bumped into him. He caught the ball.
Yeah.
And you're gonna call him. That's insanity. Yeah, How do you end a game like that?
If Graham, if you don't know what Graham is talking about, the Baltimore Orioles beat the Chicago White Sox last night, and they entered the ninth inning, I believe, up 5. It was like 8-2 or something. And the White Sox had this rally, and they scored a bunch of runs, and they had first and second with one out. And the
8-6.
8-6 down. So now down by two runs, first and second. I think Benintendi was the batter. It's first and second, one out. He hits a pop-up to the infield. And Gunnar Henderson was playing behind second base, and as he went to get the pop-up, the runner at second, you know, without even looking at Gunnar Henderson, heads back to second base because the infield fly rule has been called. He's got to go back to second base. And he slightly glances and hardly touches, but barely does make contact with Gunnar Henderson, who doesn't seem to be impeded by it at all.
Catches the ball.
Hardly moves off his trajectory. Then moves up to the inner infield and about, I don't know, 6-7 seconds later catches the ball. And the umpires rule interference and call the runner at second base out. And it's a double play that ends the game. It is an atrocious call. It has zero, the contact he makes has zero impact on him catching the ball. It would be one thing if it's right at the point of catching the ball. Like if he bumps into him right, even if it's incidental, even if it's slight contact, even if it wasn't intentional, if it's right at the moment of catching the ball, then you almost have no recourse but to call it. But this is, as he's walking another 10 yards to go catch the ball, it's not near the ball. Like, it's one of the more bizarre. I feel like when I said I have to watch it again, I have to watch it again just to make sure I saw what I saw. Because one of the more ridiculous calls I've ever... They get together, they converse, they make a decision and call it a double play to end the game. It's outrageous.
But I'm sorry, there is a recall... There is a recourse, though, because, I mean, as we both acknowledge, there was already an infield fly rule in place. If he had dropped the ball, still counted.
Yes.
It's irrelevant. He could have bumped and he could have looked at him. Ball hits the infield. Who cares? Two outs.
Yeah, I mean, I guess theoretically, the runners could take off and the ball would be on the ground or... I mean, you still can't run into the runner just because the infield fly rule has been called. I get your point. It's even more so where he doesn't even need to catch it, and you're calling it. I get that point. I do hear what you're saying, but that doesn't take the runner off the hook for being responsible for not running into the runner.
That's fair. The rules are
the egregious thing is that it's such incidental contact and it didn't impact the play at all, and you've ended the game on it. Like it's absurd. It's absolutely absurd. And that's not even coming from a Yankee fan. That could have been honestly, if that was the White Sox ending the game against Baltimore, I would say it's an absurd call. Like, this isn't a Yankee fan hoping, rooting for Baltimore losses. That's just an atrocious call.
Me too. Like, a game should be won or lost on its merits.
Yeah,
I mean,
of course.
The grander point for me is umpiring has been this bad. I think the electronic strike zone is inevitable.
Yes.
But, I mean, this almost reminded me of, like, let's go back to... Remember 2012, week four, it's the NFL referee lockout, Golden Tate, you get the interception touchdown call at the same time. It's how do we fix the umpiring, inserting themselves into games?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how you do, because you're right, even with the automated strike zone, that call from last night, thank you for the call, that call from last night still gets made. I mean, you still have on-base umpires. There's no way to avoid umpiring in general, nor would I want to. I mean, the strike zone, they have the technology to make something that's pretty difficult easier. They do have replay, but that's a judgment call. And this is what I would say, and not that even a replay would change it. I know Bill Belichick has said this about football, and I was making a big case for this in hockey, in the Carolina Rangers series, where a puck went out of bounds and should have been a delay of game penalty, but they called it a deflection, and it's clear as day on the replay, yet it's not replayable. I don't understand non-replayable. I don't think there should be anything that you can't review. You should be able to review anything. You have a limited number. And I also think you shouldn't lose. In the NFL, you need to make both to get a third. I think you should have two replays and you keep them until you get them wrong. If you challenge something and you're wrong, you lose one of them. And if you challenge the second one and you're right, you should still get that second one back. If you are correct, you shouldn't lose. And you should be able to replay anything. I don't understand why you can't replay that. And I know even judgment calls. I understand you'll be there all day. Not really, because you only have a limited number of replays and challenges. But there's no reason why you can't challenge what puck. I mean, we literally in the NBA, you will watch. It takes 20 minutes to decide which finger a ball grazed as it was going out of bounds. And that's just an out of bounds, and it could be in the second quarter. But in the third period of an NHL playoff game where penalties and power plays determine these games and series, you can't take a look to see if a puck went clean off a defender's skate into the netting or if it got deflected by an offensive skate. Like, you can't tell that? And you can't look at that? And last night, if that's a game, you want to review whether or not that should enough contact was made to determine if it's a penalty or whatever, a foul there, but it was ridiculous. It's a ridiculous call. And the umpiring is, this is what I've always said about umpiring. I don't think it's the worst it's ever been. I don't think it's good. I think we have more technology and more cameras and we are better at seeing the mistakes. I'm not saying it's good. I'm saying that it's always probably been just as bad because I don't think it's that easy, but it's probably always been just as bad. We just never had the technology or the camera angles or the ability to slow things down in slow motion and see all the mistakes. But that one was pretty egregious, even with the naked eye. Justin in Asbury Park. What's up, Justin?
Hey, Chris, what's happening, man? I have a fun question for you. Ready?
Yeah.
So building a baseball team, owner, GM, and coach, mm-hmm. using only the on-air talent of WFAN. Who are you putting where and why?
Baseball team.
Yeah.
A baseball team. Well, the owner has to be Boomer Esiason, he has the most money. So Boomer Esiason is the owner of the baseball team. And that's just, I don't know who else you'd even pick.
Well, TG owns a soccer team, right? Or,
what's
that? Partially. Doesn't TG partially own a soccer team?
Yeah, I shouldn't say that. You're right. I don't know everybody's personal finances, but I would think Boomer has been doing quite well for himself for a long time. So let's just say Boomer. I'm going to say Boomer is the owner of the team. The general manager of a baseball team?
Yep, decision maker.
Yeah, I'd say me. And then we'll go Sal Licata as the manager because he'll get in someone's face and we know he's not a data applicator. So I'll go Boomer, myself, and then Sal Licata as the manager.
All right. That's like an early 90s Yankee setup.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I probably should throw Evan in there somewhere. Let's take me out of it, to be fair. Evan, general manager. Sal Licata, manager.
I mean, carry the balls.
Right. Well, no. Listen, Evan's actually a very bright baseball guy. He's just, you know, he's just clueless in every other aspect of life. That's all. He's awkward, man. I still tell the story, and he actually texted me about another wrestling event. But I'll tell the story. I said it the other day. Like, I worked with him for 2.5 years. 2.5 years, I would come into this building. I'd walk right into his office. We would chat. We would talk. Like, I saw Evan and considered him a really good friend, and we spent every day together for 2.5 years. We hadn't seen each other for more than 6 months with my hours and his hours. We both went to a wrestling event. We got the, it was in Brooklyn. They have a box here with the station for the Nets. And we were both in the same luxury box watching a wrestling event with our kids. And the guy couldn't say two words to me. I was like, Evan, what's up, man? Hey, Chris, what's going on? And then he sat there with his family and didn't say it. Like, didn't ask me a question. I tried to talk to him a couple times. I felt like I was bothering him. And I'm like, Ev, like, I mean, you know, I feel like we're good friends. I haven't seen you in months. Could we spend 10 minutes together just catching up? How's things? How's the new show? How's life? How's the overnight, Chris? How you sleeping? Nothing. I was like, Ev, you are an odd bird, my friend.
You can be a little self-centered.
Oh, clearly. Very self-centered.
I want to tell you, too, I'm outside here at DJ's. I guess I'm first in line and no one's here yet. So anyone who wants to come.
What are you doing? You're at DJ's already?
I'm just hanging out. Why not? Why
in the,
go home?
In the what, would you have work tonight?
No. Well, yeah. And then I came here after.
And so you
so leave.
Do you work at DJ's or around DJ's?
No, I work at a hospital.
Okay. All right. So you're in the DJ's, you're parked near DJ's on the street or in the parking lot, just waiting to see Al and Jerry at 5 a.m.
That's right.
God bless you, my friend. God bless you. Thank you, Justin. I appreciate it. That's what we need. We need a little bit more. We need a little more enthusiasm. We need a little more station appreciation. Look at that guy. Still got 2 hours to go. He's sitting in his car listening to me mess up the number. Hey, Chris, I totally agree with you. What you're saying about talking God knows what. Talking, you know, right in the butt. Wheel of Fortune having some fun on this Friday morning as we're getting ready for the summer, and he's waiting for DJ to get going. I wish I was going to be there, man. I wish I can go straight there. I really do. Steven Rockman, what's up, Steve?
Hey, Chris, I totally agree with you what you're saying about replay, but why you really need replay and the big aspect of implementing it even more is because you have gambling, because you have legalized gambling. All right? I think that is a huge reason to be getting more things right so that you at least have an appearance of, you know, being on the up and up.
Oh yeah, I don't think so. I mean, listen, there's always been. I don't think legalized gambling really adds to the idea of the possibility of guys being bought. Like I mean, there's.
Oh man, okay, that's. Okay.
Why would you think?
I don't know about that. How about my gut?
I mean, if you're when you say, well, hold on. When you say that you need to have an appearance of being on the up and up. Has there not been gambling on the sport? I mean, do you think like, you know, guys who operate FanDuel are going to come threaten umpires and offer the money, or is it going to be
I am not saying that is it going to be the
same people? But my point is that there's been gambling forever. There's been the people who run the gambling, and the idea that, I mean, if you're going to try and buy and sell a referee, or things aren't going to be on the level. I don't see how the legalized gambling, so I can do it from my phone on my couch, makes it more likely that there would be some sort of nefarious thing going on.
How about this? I'm not talking about anything nefarious, but if there is, because sometimes even with the replay, they get it wrong.
Of course. Okay. Well, I mean, listen, if the point is that more people are gambling and money is at stake and your fans are putting money on the games, you're promoting the FanDuels and the DraftKings and the BetMGMs and the Bet 365, and you're in bed with these people, you need to make sure your fans who are risking their hard-earned money for the games get exactly what happened and get a fair shake. That's a better argument than...
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Steve, I'm sorry, man. Your phone is so loud. It's going right through my ear. I apologize. Everything you say is just so loud and in my ear. I'm sure it sounded bad on the radio. Try and call back with a better phone. Well, you said on the up and up. On the up and up means that the things aren't getting a fair shake, or that things are, you know. You're worried, you got to make sure that fans believe what happened actually happened, or that someone's not making sure a certain way when a certain way. Like, up and up means cheating. Now, I don't think there's any more of a level or worry of cheating now that there is legalized gambling, I do think you have fans who are putting money on the line. Like, I remember this coming up for me with the Atlanta Falcons and their running back, Robinson. And it was like, we didn't get a honest report on Robinson, on what his status was. Like, he's Saturday night, he told the team he had a devastating headache, and then he woke up, they were going to see how he woke up and see how he felt in the morning, and he felt good enough to dress, but at no point did they say he's dealing with this devastating headache and we don't know if he's going to play. Like, you have to tell when you are so involved in gambling and you are so involved in fantasy football and you are so involved in all this stuff and your fans are playing it and your fans are risking their money, they need to know whether or not a player is injured or not. Like, I'm sorry, that kind of stuff, you have to at least give out the report. He's dealing with headaches. There's a chance he doesn't play. I just need all the information. But I go into the bet knowing that the element of human error exists. Like, I don't think you can say, hey, we need replays just to make sure we get every play right for the gambling of it. I know as a gambler the situation. I know the amount of replays. I know the replay rule. I know the umpires are human. I know that there's the human element of a bad call. I don't know if it plays as much. For me, it's more of the information stuff. Like, you have to let us know what's going on with a player. You have to let us know what's going on, like that kind of stuff. Especially in football, when it's once a week and it's like all the fantasy stuff. But I want the calls right. That's the main. I want what happened to happen. And I don't understand why we pick and choose what can be challenged. Now, you want to say it's tougher to overturn? Like, you want to make it clear to the NFL teams, like, hey, you want to challenge anything, you can. But I'll tell you right now, pass interference is a tough thing to overturn. Okay. Then I know that. And I'll take my chance. I think it's so egregious, I'll throw the flag and I'll take my chances that I know overturning pass interference is tough. But why do we eliminate it? Because you would challenge every single pass on pass interference? You're only allowed a certain number and say, hey, it has to be really egregious for us to even consider overturning things like pass interference. But it makes no sense to me that you can't, because the pass interference call in that Saints game, Saints-Rams, I mean, that has to be able to be reviewed. It is a legacy-changing, job-changing, career-changing for everybody involved kind of call. And the idea that, well, no, pass interference isn't challengeable is absurd. As long as you have a challenge left, and I'm not saying give 5-6 challenges. You get 2 challenges. I'm cool with the number of challenges, but anything should be challenged. Or challengeable, excuse me. There should be nothing off limits. I should be able to challenge anything. The idea, oh no, that's a judgment call. Now, strikes and balls, like for me, arguably, why not be able to challenge a strike? I know that's kind of what they're doing in minor leagues, where I think one at bat and it's real quick, like the tennis, where they have the technology real quick. The batter turns himself, either the batter or the manager is the only two who can do it. The batter turns around and says, I want to challenge that call. And real quick, it's looked at the screen and boom, you find out immediately. That's great. But I wouldn't even be opposed to just today, without that technology, you get 2 challenges for the game. If you want to waste one or use one on a ball strike call, we'll look at it. Why not? Why are balls and strikes above? You only get 2. You want to challenge a ball and strike call? Challenge it. You got 10 seconds to do it. You can't go back and look at the replay over and over again. But, like, I'm open to almost anything. Now, that might be a stretch. I'd have to really think about that. But, like, I'm open to challenging anything.